Hey, it's Melissa from Melissa in the Morning on WICC 600. And thanks for checking out the podcast right here. If you want, you can always subscribe, share, and like it. Hope to see you guys soon. Thanks. A mandatory quarantine. And this is going to impact anyone traveling to New York, New Jersey, Connecticut from some of the high infection rate states. So that includes Alabama, Arkansas, Arizona, North and South Carolina, Texas, Utah, Washington, and of course, Florida, which we have a lot of people who spend their winters in Florida and are heading back to Connecticut, or maybe they spend some of their summer vacations in Florida. So what is that going to look like? In our family, we have my younger brother, Matthew, who spent the majority of his pandemic stay actually here in Connecticut, but returned back to work in Florida about a month ago. And he joins me now on the air. Matthew, how are you?
I'm doing good. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. So first of all, what is your reaction to Connecticut now putting a quarantine in place? So if you wanted to come up from Florida today, you'd have to be quarantined for 14 days. What do you think about that?
You know, it really doesn't surprise me because, you know, when I flew up back in March, when I found out that this whole pandemic was going to happen, that's what I actually had to do anyway. Well, at least I was forced to do it because, you know, mom wouldn't let me out of the house, but that's okay. It doesn't surprise me. I expected that to happen because, you know, with cases still going up and everything and they're going at a record pace, I figured that they were going to put some quarantine in place, you know, to just do their best to try to get cases down. Because obviously nobody wants to go into a lockdown again. Nobody wants that to happen. So whatever they got to do to, you know, stop it a little bit, you know, I can understand why.
Yeah. Now, let's talk about the infection rate in Florida, because I know it's something that Derek and I have been praying about every night, hoping that you're going to be okay, because I worry about you. You're certainly out in the public because you work at a public course. Now, what are you finding in Florida? I know here in Connecticut, as you know, we have the masks, we have social distancing. There are a lot of protocols in place. But in Florida, your infection rate has gone through the roof in the last couple of weeks. What is it like working right now at the golf courses in Florida? You're in Orlando.
Right. It's two things. One is that it's definitely a little nerve-wracking going into work because, you know, with obviously the mask thing and everything, there's people that still come that don't have a mask on and they think that, you know, it's just no big deal. And we have to keep reminding them that, hey, you need to wear a mask. And some of them don't like it. Some of them actually don't really do a good job of the social distancing part. So we have to keep reminding them to stay 6 feet apart and everything. So that gets, it's a little annoying that people don't take it seriously, but it's also nerve-wracking for me because, you know, you don't know what they've got and you're just kind of worried that you're going to catch something. And, I will say this, though, that everywhere I've gone, though, whether it's, you know, going to the grocery store, whether it's the gas station, or even, was it last week, I actually went downtown to go to one of the bars over there, and they were very serious. Like, they actually took it so long that they even put tables on the dance floor so people would literally be social distancing so nobody would be, like, garaging with each other. So they take it very seriously in certain places. And, you know, obviously the governor of Florida said that you have to wear a mask really everywhere now. So I think about 90% of the people down in Florida are taking it seriously. It's just that 10% that I worry about because unfortunately that's what's going to keep cases keep going up if people don't know how to follow the rules.
Right. And I think, you know, there are certain areas where they just aren't doing that. It sounds like from our governor that Miami seems to be your hot spot. That seems to be the big issue right now. So certainly keeping an eye on that. And for anyone just tuning in, this is my younger brother, Matthew. He lives in Orlando, Florida. He works for the Disney golf courses down there and went back to work probably about a month ago. He went back down there. And now there's this protocol in place here where if he were to return back to Connecticut for the time being, he would have to quarantine for 14 days. Now, Matthew, another thing I noticed in the news this morning, a lot of workers for Disney World are pushing for a delay. I just heard yesterday Disneyland delayed their opening because of all these issues we're seeing with high infection rates. What are you hearing down there?
Well, recently, a lot of cast members have actually come and played golf since everything's been shut down. And a lot of them have said to me that they they don't think it's a big deal and that they're excited to go back to work. And some of them were even annoyed that they weren't even called back to start working. Me personally, I have mixed feelings about it. For one thing, I mean, yeah, I think, you know, with the state of Florida, yeah, you want like a sense of normalcy. And of course, you know, Disney World is a big part of that. You know, everybody wants to come and enjoy the parks, enjoy the water parks, enjoy all the restaurants and everything. And so I'm the same way. I'd like to see that too. Unfortunately, at the same time, though, you know, this pandemic is not going away anytime soon until you find a vaccine. So it's I could see why a lot of cast members are worried about their safety and everything. And, you know, they don't want to get sick and everything. I will say one thing, though, that the one thing that I am super annoyed about is recently when I saw the petition that was on one of the Disney websites, whatever, of some of these cast members that were delaying the opening, a lot of people were commenting, basically calling these cast members, you know, garbage for complaining. And I'm just sitting there like, I don't understand how you could just be, so ignorant to somebody's feelings. I mean, it's almost similar to how you complain about a police officer not wanting to work, you know, because of these protests, because mm-hmm. they're afraid they're going to get killed. Like, I just don't see why people are so ignorant about that. And I'm not going to name every single comment, so I'll be up here for 2 hours. But there's a lot of nasty comments mm-hmm. from guests to these cast members, because these cast members work their butts off to make the magic happen. And there are some that are excited to come back, and they want to bring that magic back to all the guests that come in. And some just unfortunately just don't want to work, and it's understandable. You know, mm-hmm. your safety comes first, and you know, I guess we'll just see what happens. But, you know, I have mixed feelings about the whole thing.
Yeah, I mean, and you have to think also, Matthew, that if we rush things too quickly, that Disney's going to get shut down again. And I think that that's another thing that needs to be considered. So I appreciate your insight. And thank you for waking up so early to come on the show. He doesn't even have to work until 1 o'clock. Talk about a dedicated brother right here. So I appreciate you, Matthew. And I will probably call you later on this afternoon, like I always do. So thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. It's my pleasure. Every time I can come on your show, it's a cool thing. And it's a good distraction from the rest of everything.
From everything else that's going on. Well, I appreciate it, Matthew.
Yeah.
You're great. I love you, buddy.
I love you too. And you have a good one, all right?
Thank you, bud. I appreciate it. Checking in right now with Fire Chief Richard Thode in Bridgeport. And Chief Thode, thanks so much for being here this morning. How are you?
Good morning, Melissa. How are you?
I'm doing fine, thank you. So before we dive into fireworks, I do want to touch base about the rescue that happened last week involving a child in a power car window. Pretty incredible work from your department. What do you have to say about it?
Yeah, it was one of those unusual calls. It could have been very tragic. The child somehow got out of his car seat and came out the window, but probably his knee or something hit the button and put the window up, so his head was stuck, you know, in a power window. A civilian who we're still trying to find out the identity of broke out a window and freed the child. But when the first arriving company, Ladder 11 out in Black Rock, arrived, they found the child pulseless, lifeless. So their training kicked right in. They administered CPR, oxygen. Medics arrived, and the firefighters got the child's pulse back. The child was transported to the hospital and treated, evaluated, and it appears that maybe making a full recovery.
Wow. That is just such a crazy, wild situation. But like I said, really great work on our local fire departments. That's amazing. Now, talking about illegal fireworks, it's no secret. They are in Bridgeport. They're all over our area. People are hearing them excessively. And it's probably not going to stop until well after the 4th of July. So, first of all, in your professional opinion, you've been doing this a long time. Have you ever heard of it being this excessive before, or do you think this is because of the pandemic?
I think that it's always pretty bad. I think that there's definitely an uptick. I think that people have a lot of pent-up energy. You know, everybody, myself included, yourself included, have been boxed in for a couple months now, and it's finally getting nice out, and it's a big national holiday, and whether it's premature or not, we're all starting to breathe a little easier. And I think it's almost people want to celebrate and people want to do something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, can you outline, though, some of the biggest dangers of these? Because obviously they're illegal for a reason in Connecticut. So can you tell us maybe just some of the fire safety behind this?
Sure. The fireworks that are illegal in the state of Connecticut are airborne. So they're projectiles. So similar to what you would see in a commercial show where they shoot up and then explode. The problem is that, you know, in the hands of amateurs, they fall over, people shoot them off in their backyard and they land in trees, they land on the roof. Over my career, I've been to quite a few fires of bottle rockets and rockets getting wedged in roof shingles and ended up by burning the roof off a house.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I'm not sure, but I believe that there's a lot of talk that big brush fire in Fairfield the other day was started by fireworks. So The idea that it just kind of shoots off and you think it's going to go one direction and it goes another direction is why they're extremely, extremely dangerous.
Mm-hmm. Now, the problem is people don't feel, if you're on the other side of it, you're a neighbor who's just annoyed and so fed up with hearing them every night. People don't feel like they should even report them because, let's face it, it's not clear where the fireworks are being shot from. We don't know which house, or even if it's in your neighborhood, it could be 8 miles away for all we know, but you could still hear it. So what do you advise our listeners to do? Should they still be calling these in?
I would venture on if you can provide information besides just hearing it. You know, if you have a pretty good idea of the source, then I would absolutely report it. You know, the police are strapped and it's a very busy time of the year anyway. But you know, by doing your part and reporting this, and then then leaving it to the professionals to deal with the police and enforcement end of it, but if you just hear them and you can't tell where they came from or what direction they're in, like I said, I think if you have more information, you can kind of tell the source. That would be the tip to report it.
Speaking this morning with Chief Richard Thode of the Bridgeport Fire Department. Now, Chief, another thing I wanted to talk about was, besides illegal fireworks, it's going to be pretty common for people to be using sparklers or the legal stuff that they can use for the 4th of July. What would you say about burns this time of year, especially for young kids who are handling those sparklers?
Sure. I mean, everybody thinks because you can buy these in a gas station or a supermarket that they're without any risk. You know, just sparklers alone, the actual flame part, the bright white spot can reach almost 2,000 degrees. A small child thinking that it's harmless, you know, can grab that and really sustain some serious burns. The fireworks that are sold legally and commercially in Connecticut are the kind that sit in a yard and then they shoot off like a over-glorified fountain. Those burn extremely hot. And then the other problem with those is sometimes one of them won't fire off. People will go, they'll light it, some of it will go off, they'll go over to it to kind of look at it, and then another wave will shoot off, and they explode in people's faces, they explode in people's hands. So just because you can buy them in a supermarket or something does not mean that they don't come without risk.
And for people who do use those fountains or sparklers, what's your suggestion after they do use them and the spark goes out? You know, is there a place that you want them put so that it doesn't cause any kind of a forest fire in your backyard or anything like that?
Yeah, they should absolutely have a large bucket of water. Particularly the ones that, you know, about the size of a coffee can, they're in the backyards, you know, that we use in our backyards. You know, you should either have a long stick or something and knock it over so it's pointing away from you. And then when you're sure that there's nothing left in it, to pick it up, put it in the water and let it sit in the water, you know, for a while. Let it get all soaked through and then it should be safe.
Chief Thode, I so appreciate you giving us this insight this morning, and I know I'll be talking to you again really soon.
Good talking to you, Melissa, and take care.
Absolutely. Checking in right now with Dr. Fred Brown of Griffin Health. And Dr. Brown, good to talk to you. How are you?
Good morning, Melissa. How are you?
I'm doing fine, thanks. So several recent studies I found show that, and we knew this in the very beginning as well, but it's showing an uptick in Black, Asian, and minority ethnic individuals across the U.S. still more likely to have a poor outcome of contracting COVID-19. Can you talk a little bit about why that is?
Absolutely. So, you know, there's a lot of theories on sort of why this does occur. We do know that, you know, there's a term we call social determinants. Depending on where you live and what your zip code and what your race is, you have a, well, unfortunately, poorer health outcome. So we think that with COVID-19, it's getting into these, these areas, these societies, and portions of our society, and they're getting sick. That may be related to, poor health. It may be related to poor diets, or it may even be related to racism.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, that's good to know, because I know we've had a couple of our listeners want to point that out as well, and certainly looking to see if that's getting any better in Connecticut. Are we finding that? I know we're one of the four states that's considered to be on the path to having no infection by the end of this summer. Do you think that we are on our way to that? Do you see that happening, a no transmitted infection rate by the end of the summer?
It's unfortunately, it's anyone's guess. Mm-hmm. We really don't know, where it's going to go or where it's going to come. I mean, I still see that we could have a, cluster here or there. But I think we're doing a fantastic job. I mean, I think if this is going to be our focus, is to keep us low, I think we're doing the right thing, and I think reinforcing our citizens to, wear masks, be careful, wash their hands. And I know, there's a little controversy, and I know there's a lot of people who had to cancel their vacations, with the recent announcement from the governor on travel. But if we want to get life back to the way it was, I think this is the best way to go. At least give us time until we can get a vaccine and really go back to normal.
Yeah. And actually, just speaking of the quarantine that was put into place, do you think that your hospital is ready for a possible surge, knowing that we are in the midst of tourism season? And the problem is exactly what you pointed out. People in other states may not be practicing with masks or social distancing, which is why we're seeing such an uptick in so many states, and also a lack of testing. But if they do bring it here right now, according to the governor, it's kind of more of a warning, like it's something that you should be abiding by. But it's not like police are going to show up to your door and arrest you for it. So are you worried about that?
I'm not worried about it. I mean, we've been working on this for a while, knowing that, this is not, with the assumption that this is not done, that mm-hmm. there at any point this could increase. We want to make sure that, this has been a while now that we've had this. So I think you and I have talked about this before. We want to make sure that we are providing the proper care for our communities. We want to make sure that we don't have those, that we're addressing those social determinants in our communities. So we have to be out there, and we have to make sure that people are addressing their high blood pressure, addressing their cholesterol, things that we don't want them to forget about, addressing their diabetes, in the same time, and obviously any surgical procedures that they need to be done. But at the same time, we need to be ready at a moment's notice to gear up for patients who have COVID-19. Griffin Hospital has done a really great job. We have not taken anything down. We still have everything in place. We have been, our numbers have been low. We have probably two patients in the hospital who have COVID-19, and that's about it. So we're maintaining, maintaining good infection control. We are continuing to monitor patients as they come in from our standpoint, and we're monitoring the volume of patients, especially who comes in with possible COVID-19 or actually have it.
Talking to Dr. Fred Brown of Griffin Health this morning, and glad you brought up some of those things like cholesterol and things that we should be getting tested for, because June is Men's Health Month, and I know that there's an initiative also connected to Griffin Health with getting people to make sure they're going to the doctor. First of all, in your opinion, not even as a professional, just as a guy, why don't guys like going to the doctor? What's the deal with you guys? Why is this such a hassle?
That's a loaded question. I don't know if there's exactly a medical answer for that, unfortunately. there is interesting enough, I will throw out a statistic, and it is actually a very widespread known statistic that men who are in significant relationships or are married actually live longer than men who do not. And again, that may be an association with having a loving spouse that encourages a male to actually go and see his physician.
Yeah, that's a nice way of saying the nagging wife. Me, I book all my husband's appointments, and I'm like, would you go, please? It's been 5 years. And
Melissa, you started it.
Exactly. No, you're right. I'll take blame for that one. Now, with the pandemic, though, a lot of people have ignored getting care because they don't want to contract the virus. They're nervous about going into hospitals. So what would you say to people as to why they should be getting screenings done right now?
Yeah. You know, I would say at this point, I think given sort of everything that we have, you know, what we're doing, you know, the hand hygiene, the masks, everybody wearing masks, I think they're, you know, the likelihood of transmission is relatively low. It actually is very low if both people are wearing masks. So I think we have that aspect that's there. I think the ability to go and see a hospital and come to a hospital is sort of really important now. We want to make sure that we are aware of you know, maintaining our health. We really don't want to miss that, because that could be a major issue. The term we use is sort of high value health. You know, making sure that if you are a diabetic, that you're getting your appropriate screens. If you do have high blood pressure, cholesterol, or any other illness, that you're getting your regular visits. It is safer in hospitals now than it was 3 months ago, partly because we can test now too.
Mm-hmm.
So if anybody does have any symptoms, we can say we screen you before you even come. You know, if you have any symptoms, we can actually get testing to see if you're COVID positive or not.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a huge advantage than what we had before.
Absolutely. Dr. Fred Brown of Griffin Health, thank you so much for checking in. Always a pleasure to talk to you, and I'll talk to you again next week.
My pleasure, Melissa. Have a good day.
Thanks, you too.
Come on, you gotta think B, Barry.
Thinking B!
Thinking B!
Thinking B! Thinking B! Thinking B!
I couldn't help it. I had to play that. So this morning we're talking to Greg Dancho of the Beardsley Zoo because it's National Pollinator Week. And immediately I thought of my son's favorite movie, Bee Movie. Greg, thanks for being here this morning. How are you?
Good morning, Melissa. How are you?
I'm good. I'm thinking bees this morning. First of all, for insect haters, why are bees so important? Why can't we just kill them?
Well, bees are part of our ecosystem. They're part of our program of actually pollinators. They're pollinators, and this is Pollinator Week this week from June 22nd to June 28th. And bees are actually, they're, when people think about pollinators, they think about honeybees. And there are many, many different types of bees that live in Connecticut. And all these bees pollinate our flowers. They pollinate our vegetables, they pollinate our fruit trees. Without pollinators, we would not have any food. I mean, they actually, the people have studied this and say that one of every three bites of food that you take in a meal, pollinators have done the job to get that food to your plate.
Yeah.
So it's very, very important. And as Connecticut Spirit Zoo, one of our conservation messages is, again, not just working with the animals that we have here at the zoo, like our leopards and tigers, but we also have to worry about our backyards, the
mm-hmm.
animals that live right in our own backyards. And these pollinators are tremendously important.
Mm-hmm.
Here at the zoo, we work with many different types of programs. And actually, we've been working with some programs that have been going from state to states. We work with the program called the Hudson to Housatonic, which is creating pathways for animals all the way from the Hudson River to the Housatonic River in Stratford, trying to connect all those areas that animals can migrate through so they have safe passages.
Mm-hmm.
So we've been working with that group for a few years now. And now there's also people can be part of the pollinator pathway. The pollinator pathway basically is a subset of the H2H program, where people can start to create these pollinator gardens and pollinator areas within either their house or in their town, and have their town become a pollinator pathway. And the same thing applies. These pollinators now have areas they can transit from different areas to different areas and not have these deserts of places where they don't have anything to get food from and to procreate from. So these pollinator pathways are tremendously important.
Yeah, that is
to
really
keep going.
Cool. I love that.
It's
now,
a really cool program.
It sounds really cool. Now, we constantly hear about bees being in danger. I know the most recent were the murder hornets that kill bees. But beyond that, we've heard about for years now that bee populations are in trouble. What's the status of them this morning?
Well, actually, there is the rusty patch bumblebee, which has just been listed as an endangered species last year. This is a bumblebee, that lives in Connecticut, that now is an endangered species. And a lot of this has to do with pesticides. A lot of this has to do with us having to have a completely green lawn, which is something that, you know, is back in the 50s, everybody had that beautifully manicured green lawn. Right now, by putting those pesticides down, we are impacting these pollinators and things like these bees. And we're trying right now to start having people think about not having to use as much pesticides, not have to use as much fertilizer. There are bills up in Hartford that if people want to take a look at, they're trying to ban some of these pesticides that you would think have been gone from their area. These are pesticides that are remnants of DDT, which you think would be gone, but they're still in use in places in Connecticut that really are looking to get rid of pests. But when you're getting rid of pests, but you're also getting rid of the pollinators, it's very, very important that we stop trying to misuse chemicals and keep those habitats going.
Mm-hmm.
Here at the zoo, we have the Northeast Horticultural Group that works with us has set up a pollinator garden here at the zoo. And we have many pollinator gardens here at the zoo. We also have monarch areas where we planted plants for monarch butterflies that they can, again, be part of that pollinator pathway. And we have an area where it's what we call it the pollinator hotel, which they've created, which has places for all kinds of bees and butterflies that can actually come in and have a safe haven to do their thing and then go out and pollinate the flowers here at the zoo. So it's really some cool things that are happening. But people really have to be really cognizant that these pollinators are part of our lives, mm-hmm. and we really need to help them.
Absolutely. And just while Greg was kind of talking a little bit about this, I found pollinatorpathway.org. If you want to get involved with this, I was just looking at it. There's planting for native bees in the Northeast. There's monarch nectar plants for the Northeast. So you can click on that, and it gives you the list of the ones that you could buy. I know that's what I'm going to be doing for our garden. Now, switching gears just before we let you go, Greg, tell us about the wine safari that's coming up at the zoo.
Well, our wild wine, beer, and food safari has been for, I think, almost 10 years now, has been one of the first big parties of the season we've had here at the zoo, where we have over 1,200 people come to the facility, our facility, and have a great time, but also be a big one of our major fundraisers. And, of course, this year we've had to cancel that as a program on our grounds. So we're stepping back and doing a virtual wild wine, beer, food safari, which will be happening this Saturday. Of course, you don't have to do it this Saturday. We now have, if you go on our website at beerzoozoo.org, you can get a box of wine, beer, wine glasses, the wine glass holders, get some zoo passes that are good up until 2021. On Saturday night, we're going to have live entertainment that you can get on FaceTime and watch the people that have come to our wine safari, love the Navels, and they've been great to us. So they're going to be doing a FaceTime live for those who have purchased this box from the zoo. We're going to have a little tour of the zoo that you can pre-record a tour. And again, all these things can be purchased on our website, and you can pick them up at the zoo. Again, this is one of our major fundraisers. We're really upset. A couple of reasons. One, that we're losing that revenue, but also we're losing to see our really important guests that come to this event and really have a great time. So we really want people to remember that next year. We hope the Wild Safari will be back in full swing. So get your box of goodies here at the zoo and help us and have a great night.
And what is the website again for the zoo?
It's beerzoozoo.org is our website. And again, if you want a lot of more information on all the things that we're doing here, on our Facebook page at Connecticut's Beardsley Zoo.
All right, Greg Dancho, always a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you so much,
and
we'll talk again next week.
Take care.
All right, you
Bye-bye.
Too.